Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon podcast here in Canterbury. This week we'll be talking about the new Stephen Frears film, Florence Foster Jenkins. I'm Sam Howlett and this week I'm joined by Jenna Hobbs. How are you, Jenna?
Hiya. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. Good. Good to be back.
Yeah.
It's been a long hiatus.
I know, you've not been here for ages.
Yeah, I missed the Jungle Book, Midnight Special.
Yeah, you've missed some great ones.
Yeah. But no, good to be back. This week we're back with not the typical film we'd normally do, I think. I think this is slightly lighter and fluffier.
Yeah, out of our usual genre categories. Yeah.
So this is Florence Foster Jenkins, which is out on Friday at the Curzon Canterbury and across England. So directed by Stephen Frears, it stars Meryl Streep as a wealthy socialite who believes she is a great singer, but that's mainly thanks to her wealth, friends and her husband's absolute like devotion to try and convince her that's true.
Yeah,
because she's a terrible singer.
She's abysmal. It was painful to listen to. I thought they might dull that down a little bit for just our sensibilities in the audience, but
no.
Oh, no.
They go for it, yeah. But it's only when she decides she wants to sing in public in a larger scale that things become more complicated for her and those people around her. I think because I'd seen the trailer for this before and you hadn't seen any of her singing in the trailer.
Yeah, not really.
And they hold off for a long time before you see her sing.
Yeah, you don't know quite how bad she's going to be.
Yeah, and then when it happens, it's absolutely just dire.
And there's this really wonderful bit where someone else in the room is sort of experiencing that at the same time
exactly,
as you are.
They're in the same position you are,
and nobody else is batting an eyelid. He is like, what is going on? And I think that's kind of where we were at for a bit.
He was, are you guys hearing this?
Yeah.
So yeah, I said it's lighter and fluffier. I think there are elements of melancholia and sadness and tragedy.
Definitely. It touches on a few really sad things about illness and growing old and sort of your dreams maybe not coming true.
Yeah, and just the idea of someone being so deluded by their own fantasy that no one has the heart around them to tell them the truth.
Or they couldn't take the truth.
Exactly. And they just think that they've been so sort of like wrapped in cotton wool that it's gone too far now. So let's start talking about sort of the characters and the cast members. So what better place to start than the title? Florence Foster Jenkins, played by Meryl Streep, who brings her game.
Yeah, the wonderful Meryl Streep. Yeah. I don't think has she ever had a bad role,
I
bad
don't think
part?
So,
she's
no.
just incredible, isn't she? Yeah. She's a machine. And yeah, she does an amazing job here. It's not a typical role for her either.
It's not actually, no.
And she does it amazingly.
Yeah. She kind of reminded me of Hyacinth Bouquet from Keeping Up Appearances.
She really did have that air about her.
She's kind of like very pompous and very obsessed with class and everything being proper. But also, she's really lovable, I thought.
Yeah, I think she was really, like, genuine. There was something almost childlike about her and her life that she'd never really quite grown up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's another reason for that, which I think we can get into a bit later on, that I thought. But yeah, so she's kind of naive, in denial, oblivious to a lot of things around her, but she's so like jolly.
Yeah, she is, and she also holds a lot of the power as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's in charge most of the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like because she hires a pianist played by Simon Helberg, who is going to help her become this great singer, And there's a bit where she just barges into his room,
mm-hmm.
unattended. Because often in the film you see her, she's surrounded by people.
Yeah, she's almost chaperoned yeah. kind of at all times, isn't yeah. she?
I think we'll talk about the scene a bit later on, but I think this was my favourite scene, actually.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
it's her on her own. She just goes out, she's like, okay, I'm just going to go there. And she's like, oh, I was in the neighbourhood, so I just thought I'd barge in.
And it's kind of the only time in the film you don't see her censored by the people around her too much. She gets definitely, to sort of yeah. express herself.
Yeah, and she tells him things about her past, and yeah. it's a really nice moment. But yeah, it's the time she's really in control.
Yes.
So as we said, there is some tragedy in the film amongst this sort of comedy. And I think that this tragedy, which we'll talk about later, it gives the film like, a weight to it, mm-hmm. and it grounds it a bit.
Yeah, and I wasn't really expecting it. You get a little touch of it early on and you think, yeah. oh, something not quite here. Right there, and then it's not picked up again for ages, so you almost forget, yeah. really. You think, oh, yeah. it's probably not an issue, because obviously, we should say, maybe we have said that it's based on a true story.
Yes, oh yeah, we should mention that. Yeah.
yeah, so I was wondering if that was just a part of the story that they chose to include, but not yeah. necessarily
touch on,
but I think, yeah. they do, and it works really well.
I think, in spite of that, it is still very light and fluffy,
mm-hmm.
and they don't push that, like, edge as far as perhaps I wanted them to. Mm.
Yeah, I could agree with you there.
And I think that there's another film that's released a few weeks ago called Marguerite, which is the same story but adapts it to be in Paris.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you often get sort of like Hollywood
films come in twos. Yeah.
yeah, or British remakes of like foreign language films, but yeah. it's not usually yeah. the other way around. So yeah.
It is funny that they've done it this yeah. way around. But from what I understand, that the Marguerite is a bit darker.
Yeah.
And goes down the sort of mental illness route.
In her delusions rather yeah. than the kind of sort of bubbly yeah. fun.
And I think here, heavily, her delusion is played for laughs.
Yeah. And I actually would say one of the things I worried about with this film is how often are we laughing with her
and at her. Or at yeah. her?
Because, you know, there were times when I thought, oh, this is supposed to be funny, and almost felt like actually it's only funny because
yeah.
because I'm laughing at her, and that's not great. I think another film that kind of played with that a bit recently was Eddie the Eagle. I don't know if you
okay,
saw that one.
Yeah.
So the story of the British ski jumper who was not very good at all.
Yeah.
And I think in that one, you laugh with Eddie. I think, and it doesn't. You don't have that same sense of of like kind of guilt and that okay. you do. I think in this film every now and then.
I think definitely early on. So when you first hear her sing, it is a very funny moment, mm-hmm. and there's a scene where the piano player is in the lift.
Yeah, Simon Helberg, yeah. his face is and very just, expressive.
So he's in so much shock about that this woman that he thought was this, like, you know, amazing talent is terrible, and he's in the lift, and his face just slowly creases, and just can't control himself. I thought that was a really funny
It's
scene.
Really funny, yeah. and it's so relatable, isn't it? There's so many times where I find myself in public and I'm remembering yeah. something funny, and I'm like,
when you really shouldn't have laughed.
I can't laugh now. Everyone's going to think I'm mad. And he has that in that lift full of these sort of upper class people.
So yeah, this the comic elements of the film are given priority over sort of tragicness, but yes. I think Meryl Streep has a very good balance.
Yes, yeah, I agree with you. She's kind of outside of that because it's put upon her, the comedy.
Yeah, she has no
than,
idea.
Yeah.
So I guess the second lead, and someone I think is almost in it as much as Meryl Streep, actually, has as much screen time.
Yeah, I agree.
Is Hugh Grant as Florence Foster Jenkins' husband, Sinclair Bayfield. Great name.
There's a lot of great names. I don't think we touched on Cosmo McMoon.
Cosmo McMoon, yeah. genius. Yeah, I think it's equally about him as well, in a way.
I think you can argue that it's more about him.
Yeah.
It's about sort of his life and how he looks after her and he manages her. And, you know, the life he has with her isn't very normal.
Yeah.
And about how he keeps up a normal life on the outside of that and balances those two. I often think you follow him a little bit more than her.
Absolutely, yeah. I think as well, I think this is a spoiler to say, that he is having what seems to be an affair.
Yeah.
With Rebecca Ferguson.
Yes.
Not the actual Rebecca Ferguson.
Rebecca Ferguson of Mission Impossible.
Yes, Rogue Nation and the White Queen.
Mm-hmm.
So initially you think, oh, he's a bit dastardly. He's a bit of a sort of schemer. He's just with her for the money.
You do see that quite early on with her. And I saw it and I thought, no. Because you've seen him being so loving and so kind. I think there's almost a paternal vibe between Florence and St. Clair.
Yes.
But he clearly cares for her a lot. And then he, you see him with her very quickly, and I was like, oh no, this isn't going to be what I thought it was going to be. It's horrible. But actually,
I think, yeah, he's very warm and very loving to Florence, but just misguided.
Yeah.
I mean, he goes so far to prevent her seeing the truth that she's told St. Clair, bribing critics, buying all the newspapers in a
I was wondering
radius.
How much money have they got, because he
they
is
seem to have
bribing a lot.
Yeah. It seemed, from what I read, it seemed to be she's inherited a lot of money.
I see.
And that's where it all comes from.
And also, I mean, it's very opulent where they're living.
Yes.
It's
a hotel.
Yeah, in the top of a hotel.
In
it's
New
like
York. Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. And I think that's a great thing we should chat about, the set and the costume and design and stuff later. It's amazing.
Definitely. I think this is a film that's very well crafted.
Mm.
And it really nails the 1940s New York era.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think with St. Clair that he goes so far, is that because he loves Florence, or is that because of monetary gain? Because the film is slightly unclear.
Yeah.
I know what I think, but I'm wondering.
So I would say I was on the fence. I was hopping between the two, because it is very, his time with her is very tender. It's very loving, and he does care for her. But as I also said, I think it's a little bit paternal. And so part of me was thinking, what was it? You know, has he met someone he thinks he can put up with and deal with for the cash? Because, I'm not sure.
Okay.
What about you?
I think he generally loved her from what I saw. But it just in a misguided way. And I think he just got sort of, he entrapped himself in this lie that she's a great talent, that he just had no way out of it, so just had to do everything he could.
Had to keep going. And there's actually this really lovely little moment where he's explaining to Cosme how his life works, and he just says that love takes many forms, and of course he loves Florence, and it kind of, he says that their love transcends
physicality. He can get what he wants physically from Rebecca Ferguson's character.
And that they have a kind of emotional, spiritual connection. Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting way to think about life.
Definitely. I think as well, what we were saying earlier, that his efforts to prevent her finding out the truth, like running out and buying the newspapers and bribing those people, is played for laughs, but there's also something sad about it, that this is his life, that he's just preventing one person from living what their life is.
Mm-hmm. And caring about someone that much to go to that extreme.
Definitely, yeah. So I guess the third lead would be Cosme McMoon, piano player, played by Simon Helberg, who you know as Howard Wolowitz from The Big Bang Theory, if you watch The Big Bang Theory. He's an actor who's kind of known for like doing impressions in America, and he kind of brings, he makes Cosme McMoon a real character, I think.
Yeah.
Not a caricature, though, I think, because he's very camp.
Yeah, he is very camp.
But I didn't find it because often in films, a camp character is there as the comic relief, and is like the funny sidekick that comes on screen, is very flamboyant.
Yeah,
does
no, he's
camp,
not. He doesn't do that.
Goes.
He's. I think he's there to be so. Well, he feels like you in that journey.
Yeah,
because he's understanding, and it's unraveling for him at the same pace as the audience. And I think that's great to have someone along that journey, because else it could be very confusing as to what's going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are revealed very slowly, often through Cosme's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I just liked his, because I haven't seen this kind of character for a while. I think this kind of, he's very kind of effeminate, but not but it's not mocking him in that respect, which I quite liked. And as we said, so he auditions to be her piano player, thinking that she's this great talent, and him finding out that she's a terrible singer is great, and then him in the lift is hilarious. But there's also this very sweet scene later on. She goes to his apartment, and he's just in his vest. It's kind of a crimey little apartment.
He's lifting weights.
He turns out to be a weightlifter in real life.
I think that spoils anything, just to know that that's the end of his story. It's very funny.
Do you think maybe Cosme is kind of the child that they never had, in a way? Because there's a scene where she sort of says, oh, I'm sorry I never gave you a child to
Sinclair.
Oh,
that's so heartbreaking. Yeah. That really reminded me of, I don't know if you watched 45 Years with Charlotte Rampling.
Yes, yes.
There's a scene where they discuss the fact they never had a child, and I think that's actually quite an interesting thing that films like looking at the moment is what it means to be an older couple who never had a child,
children,
and what's kind of left behind of them.
Yeah, certainly. And so there's that scene there, and I just, the way that she sort of opens up to him and the way that Hugh Grant almost like takes him under his wing when they go to parties and places like that. I thought there's a kind of like a parent-child relationship a little bit with them.
Yeah, and so as you just mentioned the party, can we just take moment to talk about Hugh Grant's dancing?
Oh, yeah.
I think it tops Hugh Grant in Love, actually. It's unbelievable.
So many arms.
Oh, my goodness. It was so funny. So much flailing. Yeah. It's worth watching the film. Like, honestly, for that scene alone, it was unreal. It was amazing. I'm sure it's going to haunt Hugh forever.
I think the film is almost a screwball comedy at times, but it seems like that.
Yeah, it is. It is. It kind of goes from the pathos straight into these like kitschy, hilarious things. And you got
running around with like people wearing like fedora and trilby hats, running around. Yeah. Go buy these newspapers, and, like, and then there's a dance scene, and then there's a funny chase scene. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I think Hugh Grant. Generally, I think this is the best performance he's given in a very long time.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with
you. Just being Hugh Grant.
He's not just being the foppish English gentleman.
He's still playing an English gentleman.
An Earl. Yes.
But he's still very, just, there's just more to him here.
Yeah, I think Hugh Grant's been great at knowing his kind of type and his role. Because he's got the floppy hair and he's got that kind of, dastardly grin and things. But there's nothing dastardly really about him in this film.
No, there's not.
And maybe that's why it took me a little while to realise that he was genuine. So I'm so used to him being like Daniel Cleaver and Bridget Jones.
Yeah. We think that's what he's like in real life.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry, Hugh.
We mentioned that her singing is horrendous. Do you think they maybe overdid that?
Well, I thought maybe yes, because it hurt my ears to such an extent. There was a time I looked over at you and you were like, oh. But apparently she was that god awful. Yeah, I tried to listen to a little clip of her singing, and I think they put her singing in at the end of the film, actually. She only made one recording. Yeah. But it was pretty bad. Apparently her illness had sort of...
I'd read this as well,
role in that.
Yeah. It's also crazy to think that this actually happened.
Yeah.
That people let her get away with this. And then, like, Carnegie Hall is sold out.
Yeah.
But partly because people thought it was funny.
Yeah, and that's kind of the tragic thing is, do we think people thought it was funny because they sort of loved her and they were in on it with her? And in that kind of Eddie the Eagle, it's so funny, bless it. Like, you know, we're with him, he's rubbish, but he's doing it anyway.
Yeah.
But because she was so deluded and thinking she was good.
People were mocking her, because it seemed a lot of the time people were mocking her.
Yeah, there is a scene, where the whole crowd is mocking.
Yeah. That was one of the most heartbreaking scenes, I thought, because that's the first time she realises that something's off, and then she sort of turns and looks at Hugh Grant, and it was like, oh, no.
Yeah, and you can see it in their faces. And that's because she's had this sort of childlike wonder and naivety and the whole way through. And in her face the whole way, you know, this sort of beautiful sereneness about everything. Yeah. And when to see that crack was...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah. Really sad.
Definitely, yeah. So before we get to spoiler territory, there's a scene where she's sort of testing out piano players, and one of them is sort of more modernist, and he sort of plays it very loudly, and it's more eclectic than, you know, it's not classical, and she doesn't like it, and she favours the traditional pianist, and I kind of think that's the film's approach, that it's not trying to be new or a mod, particularly modern or experimental or anything you haven't typically seen before. It's just trying to be nice, classic, tell this story as it is without upsetting anyone.
A well-made film. Yeah,
and that's not a criticism story. Because sometimes you just need that. I think often when you're telling true life tales, you kind of need to have the true life should have priority over the direction.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. I think from reading up about the story, it's tried to remain very faithful to the original story.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, because often with these things, based on true story, it doesn't really mean that much. Mm-hmm. But having looked at it, this was very faithful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like the Danish Girl, for example, that was around at Oscar time, was based on a true story. But actually, when you looked into it, hardly any of that was true at all. Yeah, it really did. And so I think it can actually be quite unfair to give to use these people's names and say that this was their life.
Yeah, exactly.
When it's not, especially when it's all these years later and most people are only going to know about them through the film.
Yeah, no one's there to defend themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So anything to add before we ruin the end of the film?
I just think if you haven't seen it yet, go watch Grant Do His Dance.
I think a lot of people are going to see this.
Yeah, I hope so.
I think people will always see Meryl Streep.
Yes.
And they should.
And also, it's actually great to see Hugh Grant and Meryl together. They've never acted together before. And apparently, he was in semi-retirement until he heard that he could act upon...
With Meryl Streep.
And say and he you would. On. Yeah, yeah, you would.
You would, definitely. I think it's good just to see these actors who you've known for so many years now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, on screen together and just doing a really good job.
Yeah.
And it's still great to see Meryl Streep, a woman of her age, lead a film.
Yeah. Yeah, she's unstoppable. She's amazing. Absolutely. And also, it's great to see Meryl Streep and Hugh Grant, who are of similar ages,
as
in a relationship
couple,
together.
And we know that he does have an affair, but still they are a couple.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. And that's what couples should look like.
Exactly. Yeah, we're very used to seeing a lot older men with young women.
Definitely.
It's great. This film seems very different.
Yeah, it's a fun film.
Yeah.
It's very jolly. It's got a lot of energy. There is sort of a sad undertone. But I think if you're up for just something nice and lighter than perhaps what we've discussed in the past few weeks, then I think this is one for you.
Yeah, definitely. This is the film for you.
Okay, so now we're going to discuss plot revelations that weren't in the trailer and that we think are better if you go in unknown. So the thing that really shocked me was that she has syphilis.
Yeah.
Because that's an illness that I think is really quite unexplored in film and something that I haven't really seen much about. So because you see him put her to bed, and he does put her to bed, like you're saying, quite paternally, and then he tucks her in. And then he takes off her wig, and I was like, "Oh, some sort of cancer, etc."
Yeah,
but then you said, "Like, but like chemotherapy didn't really exist in like."
I was like, "Did it exist? She wouldn't have lost her hair."
Yeah,
and so we're like, "What could be wrong?" And I had no idea syphilis made you lose all your hair.
No, well, I think it's the medication.
Oh,
like,
is it
the mercury and the arsenic?
Oh, I see.
I think that's what makes her weak. And I've also read that this is what maybe added to her delusion.
Oh,
that it was the medication.
Well, actually, mercury's pretty bad for you,
isn't
it?
Yeah, so that could have added to it.
And that's very sad. I think it's always sad to see an illness being explored in a time period where they didn't understand it as well, and seeing the mistakes that are being made, especially when you know that syphilis is quite treatable now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's really, really sad.
Yeah, and it does take a while for them to reveal what the illness is.
Yeah, you see that she's ill, and then she has a really bad turn, and the doctor comes.
Yeah.
And
I think that's quite a nice way to reveal it, because he's not her regular doctor. He's a new doctor, so then he has to have things explained to him as if for the first time. So that worked out quite well, because sometimes in films, like, exposition is quite clunky.
Yes, definitely.
Like, introducing stuff. Oh, hello, my sister. That kind of thing. Oh, hello, doctor. Remember I have syphilis.
Like, yeah, and I think that's what this does really well. So I'm saying it's very natural. It's very lifelike in that kind of...
Everything just happens and you're not that confused.
No.
So, yeah, that's revealed. And it's revealed that she got it from her first husband.
Yeah.
Who she eloped with in a sort of rebellious act.
Well, her parents, so I think her parents, or her father at least, had cut her off for wanting to pursue a life of music because he thought it wasn't worthwhile. Yeah. And so she'd met this man who married her and sort of saved her a little bit in some ways.
Yeah.
But it's really sad when she kind of reveals that he was a bit of a philanderer.
Well,
and
I think she uses the phrase, he was a bit of an alley cat. Which is quite, because that's such a like innocent way to describe someone who sort of sleeps around a bit.
That's actually my mum's way of describing it. My mum would be like, that person's a real alley cat.
Real alley cat.
Right,
It's really innocent. It's really quite a sweet innocent way to describe it.
Yeah.
But it just makes it even more tragic. Like, oh,
and the, it's her wedding night.
Yeah.
That she contracts it. And it almost explains a lot, really, about how naive definitely she is. Because she didn't really get that chance to grow up.
No. And when she tried to grow up, this happened to her. So that's why she's
and then
stuck
she needed protecting and looking yeah after.
Yeah. And which she, yeah, which she often does. And it also means that she can't have sex with Sinclair.
Yeah.
And they can't have children. And he's, you know, I think in some films there'd be some sort of anger directed at her from mm-hmm him. But he's, because I think their relationship's quite a nice relationship in many ways.
Yeah.
That he's like, no, that's well, okay, that's the life.
You never see them argue, no, you never yeah see anything be wrong. They, to be yeah fair, for all intents and purposes, they have the perfect
it's
marriage.
It's quite healthy.
It's quite healthy. And she knows, you find out about his, well, she knows what she wants to know about his other life with another woman.
Yeah.
Is basically what you know.
Yeah, it's almost like she's just too innocent to, like,
yeah
care that her husband sleeps with another woman.
Yeah.
And she sort of thinks, that's not really important to me, like.
Yeah, he's there for her yeah when she needs him.
Yeah, exactly.
Apart from there's one little moment where that cracks, isn't there?
Yeah, and she goes to the house after the party, which again is a quite a funny scene.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Yeah. There's been a big party, and so Sinclair lives with, or spends the nights with...
yeah, in this other apartment.
Yes.
With Rebecca Ferguson's
yes
character.
I can't remember her name, can you?
No, it's gone.
Damn. Oh, Kathleen.
Kathleen,
that was her name.
That's it.
Yeah, spends the nights with Kathleen, and yeah obviously, and then Florence turns up, and she shouldn't turn up, and they've had a party,
yeah,
and so they quickly run around trying to
yeah
hide everything, and... but it's all, that's the thing, it is all kept nice with Florence at that point. She doesn't really
yeah
know what's gone on.
She sort of thinks that... Oh, the it's you know, Cosme's just had a bit of a bender.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, I'm very disappointed in you, kind of like.
Yeah, and then you see it from Kathleen's point of view, who's had to hide in the cupboard.
Yeah,
and oh, she has got a thankless life there. She's sort of living. She obviously loves Sinclair.
Yeah.
She's living with him in this lovely apartment, but she's only living half a life.
Yeah, she's living in the constantly living in the shadows, and like just has to
yeah
keep by the side of everything that ever happens.
Living
yeah
in the shadow of the person that he
yeah
would you say really loves, or loves in the kind of like a meeting
more,
of
yeah
minds kind
perhaps
of way, and
perhaps
what she just there
yeah
for.
I think it's a, we said it's a healthy relationship, but it is also very complex as
yeah
well. Sinclair and Florence, definitely. So I think as well, There's one thing that she has. She has a fear of like pointy objects.
Gee, does that ever get explained?
That doesn't get explained.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but well.
I mean, it would
think
be
there's
really
a kind of
bizarre if it's not true.
Yeah.
And they've just decided to pop that in, not explain it at all. But
you
what
could
you
see that as a kind of Freud thing.
Do you think?
Because sex has ruined her life essentially,
yeah,
so now
yeah
she has a fear of pointed objects.
Like
I don't know.
Objects.
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, potentially.
Potentially.
Well, you only really see that come to light. So St. Clair mentions it to Cosme, like,
don't
smoke, don't point objects
yeah
around Miss Jenkins
yeah
or whatever, because she can't handle
yeah
it. And you kind of forget about it. And then when she goes to visit Cosme in his apartment,
yeah,
she drops a knife and has a real sort of fit about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I
maybe.
Because a while during the film, I was thinking, oh, you know, this husband that she had, maybe he was kind of a bit threatening, a bit abusive.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why she's scared or
yeah
something like that. But maybe you're right.
I don't know. It is a strange plot point.
Yeah.
That's dropped very quickly.
Yeah, it is.
So back on the top board, we were saying that Cosme could be kind of a child figure to them.
Mm.
She puts him in her will. Which
yes
I think also adds to that.
Yeah, and so there's this kind of mystery of don't ask her
what's
about
in the briefcase.
Briefcase.
I thought it was going to be like a Pulp Fiction type thing, but you never find out. So that's what's in the briefcase.
But
<never know.
laughs> it's her will, and she
yeah
decides to write Cosme into her will.
Yeah, that was quite a nice moment as
yeah
well.
Yeah, well, I think it was almost a recognition of everything he'd done for her.
Yeah.
Because he also, to be fair, kind of had to sacrifice being a serious pianist
yeah
himself.
And I think when you see at the end, which these... true life biopics often do, this person ended up like this until their
yeah
death, so and so. And you find out that Cosme didn't stay on to be a piano player. He became a weightlifting judge at
yeah
weightlifting competitions and bodybuilding shows. And I think that he kind of, yeah, he basically had to give up his career because he was just constantly associated. He would have surely just been associated with the woman that couldn't sing.
And it's just a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
And you see him wrestling with that a bit. And
yeah
he almost doesn't turn up to Carnegie Hall to play for
yeah
her. But he kind of realises that she needs him and he cares for her in
the
same way.
Yeah, he's going to call because Sinclair says to him, oh, I think Florence really rather loves you and I think you love her too.
Yeah.
And I think he does. I think he has like, they've got this...
I think she's the kind of woman that's hard not to love, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's very hard to say no to. Yeah. Which I think is what the whole film's like.
Yes.
Shows you that no one can say no to this woman.
And that's how it gets this far. And actually maybe sometimes it would have been kinder to have said no.
Yeah. So what did you think about the moment Florence finds out the truth? How did you think that went down?
So it's kind of a half reveal and then another big reveal.
Yeah, because she's revealed at the concert when they laugh and then suddenly a woman in the audience who's cropped up, this little blonde
kind of this sort of like bombshell, been married to someone who's a real music lover and thinks that Florence is good. I don't know if
she's
is a Betty Boop and... I kind of was annoyed by her throughout
most of the film.
She's like, well, it's just such a caricature and I get sick of women being represented like that. But she does stand up for Florence.
Yeah, which I guess because she's seen her a couple of times now and has maybe warmed to her and kind of understands it a bit more. But this was probably my least favourite part.
I did hate that.
Because I kind of wanted them to go with it, like... They all laugh at her. Florence sees that. The whole of Carnegie Hall is very loudly laughing at her. She's invited all these... this is quite sad as well that she's invited all these soldiers because she thinks she's doing a really nice thing.
Yeah, because she hears on the radio, doesn't she, that the soldiers...
is missing in action.
And it's making them feel better.
About what is that kind of attitude to it? Yeah. And it's like she's doing something really nice, but then they're all laughing at her, which is quite sad. And then they're all
drunk and not taking it seriously. Yeah. And it's not what she's experienced at all because she's so sheltered. She's experienced
polite clapping in her club and socialites. And she sort of looks at Sinclair like, what's going on? And you're like, oh God, this is the moment. Mm-hmm. But then suddenly, the bombshell character stands up and goes, stop laughing at her!
Yeah.
And then everyone, people eventually stand up and clap her. And I thought that it was kind of nice.
It was kind of nice. But maybe if she'd have come off stage and realised after that with Sinclair and realised that she wasn't a good singer, but isn't it amazing that people come together like that? Or something like that. Appreciate her life for what it was. But she didn't.
I think you nailed it when you said it's a half reveal.
Yeah.
It's kind of just going halfway and it's like, nearly, not quite,
Yeah.
So the bit later on is when she actually manages to get hold of one of the newspapers. She finds out that Sinclair bought all the newspapers at this newsstand outside the hotel and threw them in the bin. And then she finds it and she finds the review, which this reviewer left Carnegie Hall early.
Yeah.
And Sinclair tried to bribe him up to like £500.
Yeah.
Dollars.
Which would have been so much.
Yeah. it's just weird. Yeah. Hugh Grant, pounds. chasing him out and it didn't work. And Florence Foster Jenkins, worst singer ever. That was the headline of the review. And then she goes back to the hotel and faints.
Yeah, I suppose it validates everything Sinclair and Hugh Grant's character have been doing, because obviously she can't take the truth at all.
Definitely.
But that's obviously the worst way to find out.
Yeah,
On her own, in a newspaper that she knows the whole city's reading, and it's embarrassing.
Has everyone been laughing at me the whole time? She says on her deathbed, and then Sinclair says, I never laughed at you, which was a really nice moment.
That was really lovely, actually, that was very, very sweet. Sweet little Hugh Grant moment. I was never laughing, but
I think that's the one bit that's not true, because from what I read, she had a heart attack in a music shop.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that is the one bit they changed. Yeah. But you've got to give them a little bit.
Definitely. I mean, compared to like, what other things do. Yeah.
This yeah. Is, this and they needed yeah. that kind of resolution.
I think it makes sense. It's kind of like finding out about the truth is what killed her.
Yeah.
In a way, they show. But then she also seems to be her scene on her deathbed. Was a strange one because on the one hand it's kind of like she accepts it. How long has everyone been laughing at me the whole time? She's kind of slightly jokey about it, but then she also has this very strange hallucination where she can fully sing and they're all on stage and she's in her angel wings.
So they kind of said that the syphilis may have destroys her abilities to sing.
Yeah.
And what I don't know if how true this is, that maybe she could sing before. Her losing that illness, allowing her to be free from that again and be the person she wants to be. I kind of read it like that, but I don't know.
Okay. I wasn't sure because it seemed slightly that she still couldn't let go of this idea that she was deluded and she was a great singer, even till the end. She was still so convinced this is what she thought she sounded like the whole time. And but I'm not sure.
It was nice to hear how she thought she sounded as well.
Yeah, she's very good.
Yeah.
She's all right.
I wondered, was it Meryl Streep that sang?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. Well, she has sung before, wasn't she? Mamma Mia, Into the Woods.
She's not the worst in Mamma Mia by a long shot.
Oh, Pierce. So, yeah, just to wrap up, any final points? I think we've covered what we can.
I think it's a more than anything, away from the singing, which so maybe it's problematic at times as to whether or not you're laughing with or at her, and how you feel about that.
And it's up and down as well, because I kind of think like once you find out the truth about her illness, it should be far more empathetic to her.
Yes, yeah.
And at times it isn't.
It isn't.
She's still a joke.
But I think my favourite part about this film is the relationship between Florence and her husband Sinclair, and the way that plays out, and it's a very interesting look on the sacrifices you make for love.
Absolutely. So thank you very much for listening. Florence Foster Jenkins will be released in cinemas on Friday the 6th of May. See you next week.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.